Hare Krishna. How nice to be here with you all in front of Shishi Nitai Gaura Hari, Sri Giri Govardhan, Nitai Sachi Sutta, Srila Prabhupada, and all of you nice Vaishnavas. Maybe I could just say a word to Mataji. You really know how to operate a camera. You know what it's set on right now? It's set on manual. I wouldn't try if it's, unless you're sitting position. Put it on water and just close your eyes. Yes, okay. So, very nice to be here with you all in front of the Lord and the Lord's very pure devotee. What can we say? It's just our great good fortune. In fact, it is inestimable. And we're here for this wonderful initiation ceremony. We have 8 devotees here who are receiving initiations. 4 are receiving first, 4 are receiving second initiation. That's very nice. And I'm sure Srila Prabhupada is very happy indeed to see the devotees coming forward to take first initiation and in this way make real commitments, deeper commitments than they may have done so far. Or maybe just to reconfirm commitments they've already made within their hearts. And then in the cases of those who are receiving second initiation, I'm sure Prabhupada's happy to see they've made progress. They received first initiation some time ago, but in the meantime they've made progress and the devotees are pleased with them. The yatra authorities are pleased with them. Spiritual master is pleased with them. And in this way they are receiving really wonderful opportunities to progress further. Opportunities and facilities to progress further. So let us say a few words about these initiations. First initiation, of course, is the beginning, or it's to do with the beginning. The general idea is, you could say, that up until the point of first initiation, a person is just, looking, seeing, trying, practicing, seeing what happens. Of course, it may not always just be like that, but at least there isn't that very open and even public commitment, like taking vows, serious vows, publicly in front of the Lord, Prabhupada, all the devotees, the spiritual master. There's at least the idea of some freedom, liberality, and we don't necessarily expect too much. Of course, we hope for as much as possible, but we don't expect too much from the devotees who are not initiated. But then, you know the process as described by Srila Rupa Goswami, adal shraddha, first of all a little faith, or even like a little acceptance. Krishna consciousness seems interesting, Let us try, let us get involved and see. Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. Then on the basis of that initial interest, then one voluntarily associates with devotees and gets to know the devotees, and in this way develops some positive appreciation for the devotees and for the process. And then following that is Bhajana Kriya. Bhajana Kriya means practical engagement, like a more serious type of constructive engagement in the process of devotional service. Srila Prabhupada, on a number of occasions, he would equate Bhajana Kriya, or that being regularly engaged in devotional service, with taking first initiation. On numerous occasions, Prabhupada spoke like that and wrote like that. It doesn't always have to be exactly like that, but as a rule of thumb, in a general sense. Because Bhajana Kriya, it really does indicate clearly a regular, consistent engagement in devotional service, which of course can only really be based on a deeper acceptance and willingness and enthusiasm, inspiration. And then of course one goes on further. Anatta Nivritti, really working on getting free of the unwanted qualities and desires, conceptions. But basically, first initiation is like around the level of Bhajana Kriya, becoming regularly engaged in devotional service, and not just in a casual way, not just as an onlooker, but as a real participant in the process with a view to progressing and achieving something in one's life through devotional service. So in the first initiation there are a number of different elements present. Of course, the most, I guess you would say, noticeable, prominent, and, well, definitely the most exciting is to receive a new spiritual name. Instead of being just, you know, Mr. or Ms. Ordinary, like everybody else who's just wandering around in this world, different versions of mediocrity, and often less than mediocrity. But now one is accepting the identity of being a devotee, being one of the Lord's team, a real team member. And not just, you know, the onlooker type of situation, type of person. So that receiving the spiritual name, that's something very nice. And we've done our best to try to select some nice names. And then after the first initiation, the devotees should really be identified and addressed and referred to by their spiritual names. You know, it happens, I'm sure you've all had the experience. I heard, I don't know if it was yesterday, if not the day before, some initiated devotee being referred to by their pre-initiation name. you know, for legal purposes or work or business purposes, that's all right. But in the community of devotees, when someone is initiated, including, of course, receiving a spiritual name, they should be identified like that, because that's who they are. They're not just the old materialistic person from before. Now they're devotees, Krishna Das, like that. And so that's there as an element in the picture for first initiation. Then, of course, there are the vows. The vows, the devotees, to receive first initiation, they must take the vows in front of everyone that we will follow the regulative principles. No meat eating, no meat, fish, eggs, onions, garlic. There's a few sort of slightly flexible parts of it, like, you know, what do they say? The jury is still out on chocolate and the occasional mushroom, maybe. I don't know really, but definitely no meat, fish, eggs, no onions, no garlic. These are opposed. This is against the regulative principles. And it's an offense. Particularly if someone just willfully, you know, I mean, meat, fish, eggs, that's kind of, you know, off the scale, really. Onions and garlic, too, you know. It's breaking a principle if one takes onions and or garlic. And then, so no meat, fish, eggs, no intoxication, including tea and coffee. No gambling, no illicit sex life. In gambling, there's sort of some, obviously gambling as such is just completely out. Like frequenting casinos, all that sort of thing, is just obviously completely out. Sometimes Prabhupada would apply this principle in the sense of like mundane entertainment, mundane sporting activities. I read the book, Mukunda Maharaj's book, maybe some of you have read it. What is it? Miracle on Second Avenue. And there, Prabhupada, somewhere Prabhupada was with devotees, and maybe they saw some people playing golf, or there was some reference in some news media or something, but somehow golf came up. And Srila Prabhupada said to the effect that, yes, golf, the king of useless activities, to that effect. And Prabhupada, not there as I recall, but definitely elsewhere, I'm sure many of you have heard, Prabhupada was in Hawaii and saw people surfing. And Prabhupada said, who are they? And the devotee said, they're surfers, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, oh, sea sufferers. And the devotee said, no, Prabhupada, surfers. And Prabhupada said, yes, sea sufferers. So, anyway, but definitely no gambling, obviously. And these other things, you know, particularly like mundane entertainment, watching these, the Hollywood, Bollywood, it's just really, you know, it's definitely useless activity at best. And at worst, you get exposed to, you know, I read a few years ago that many Bollywood movies were banned in Pakistan, would you believe? for being, what would you say, like, indirectly or covertly pornographic. Yeah. Not in just some sort of bizarre sense, but, you know, it's sort of extremely suggestive and that sort of thing. And then, of course, no illicit sex life. And sometimes there's debate or lack of clarity, perhaps, what that means or is really referring to. But the basic idea, in very simple terms, no illicit sex life means just between husband and wife, at the suitable time, specifically for the purpose of having a child to be raised in Krishna consciousness. So these are the four regulative principles which our four devotees who are receiving first initiation today will vow to avoid these things, to vow to follow the four regulative principles. And then, of course, to chant not less than 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day. So, which brings us to, you know, another point, in fact, which in one sense ultimately is the most important. I mean, they're all arguably the most important in their own ways, but the whole process of Krishna consciousness is based on chanting Hare Krishna. It is the Yuga Dharma. Without the chanting of Hare Krishna, there's no question of what to speak of achieving the goal of life. There's not even any real question of making much progress at all in Krishna consciousness. And we observe, actually, it's very interesting. In India, of course, there's so many people, there's just really, really lots of people who are religiously minded. And amongst all of them, there's quite a number who are involved in some Vaishnav line. It's not just, we're different, the ISKCON is not the only Krishna conscious group in India by any means. There are many more, but, you know, in observing and actually knowing, or meeting and even you could say knowing, a fair number of these people, even over many years, one sees in many cases they're not really making observable progress because they're not really chanting Hare Krishna much. Some of them not at all even. And, you know, just as a very clear and very interesting example to note, even amongst the followers of Lord Chaitanya, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and there are all sorts of different groups. There's the Babajis, the caste Goswamis, the caste Brahmins. There are different variations of Sahajiyas. These are people who, you know, at least on a certain level, at least if you ask them, they'll definitely say they're followers of Lord Chaitanya. And in certain regards, they are following. But it's only really, my experience is, it's only really in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada's movement, not even in the Gaudiya Math, sort of the remnants of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's movement, that you find the members are consistently every day as a or even the foundational activity in their whole program. They're seriously chanting Hare Krishna every day. Then you go to many of these temples, like we just came back from Vrindavan on Tuesday, and we visited so many temples and encountered so many of these people. And you know, a lot of these temples are sort of deteriorated. Not all of them, some of them are doing well. At least physically, the structure is still intact and decorated nicely. But many of these places, the temples have actually deteriorated, and some have been abandoned and some sort of effectively abandoned. Like we were in the Radha Damodar temple some days ago, maybe 10 days ago, whatever. And on the altar there are 4 sets of deities, big deities. The altar is full. There's no room. And so there's different deities which were worshipped by different famous devotees like Krishnadas, Kaviraj Goswami, and some others. But now they're all on one altar in this one nice temple. Very nice, Radha Damodar. But why are they all there? Because they used to have their own temples. Each one had their own temple. But after some time, the devotees couldn't maintain the temple. Ran out of money, ran out of time, and so they just handed them over to a more successful temple. And what is the foundational cause of that deterioration is that they're not chanting Hare Krishna, at least enough, and maybe, you know, hardly at all, and in some cases actually not at all. So what we're saying then, when we're talking about these elements in the picture of first initiation, what's involved, and one element, and perhaps the main, is this chanting of Hare Krishna. Harir Nam Eva Kevalam. I'm sure we're all very familiar with that verse. The chanting of the holy names is the only way. You know, oftentimes when religious people talk about something as being the only way, people think they're fanatics. Many of them are. In this case, we're not. It's just true. Chanting the holy names is the only way. And therefore in first initiation, it's, shall we say, the most important thing. And therefore the devotees take that vow to chant not less than 16 rounds a day, and they must do it. And if they don't, you know, from time to time someone drifts away. And if people drift away, or when people drift away, then often or usually, but at least often, part of the problem is they're chanting. And on the other hand, when you see someone who's doing very nicely, they're enthusiastic, they're manifesting nice qualities of personality, so they're nice to associate with, they're happy to engage in service, and they're not caught up in nonsense. In so many cases, if not all, you'll see that they're chanting very nicely. They're making a real priority of their chanting and really working on it. So, yes, because Harianam Eva Kevalam. Without that, everything will fall to pieces. It's not a question of if, it's just a question of when. So this is there. These are the things that are there. Of course, in the chanting of Hare Krishna, as Prabhupada would emphasize, often or generally when he would give first initiation, there is a certain quality which has to be there in the chanting. If it's done just in a lackadaisical way or just to get it done sort of way, as Mahatma Prabhu, I'm sure you've heard of him, would say, courtesy japa, just as a courtesy. You know, I said I would, okay, so I do it. Yeah. So there has to be a quality to the chanting for it to work as much as it can, and even we could say as much as we need it to work on us to really help us change and become better people and better and real devotees. So that quality means we must avoid the 10 offenses. Yes. So we must avoid the 10 offenses, beginning with blaspheming the devotees. And, you know, blaspheming is sort of like an umbrella idea, but the general idea is we shouldn't criticize, we shouldn't be negative, we should be positive, we should have an attitude of service towards the devotees. And we shouldn't engage in meaningless, or say useless, negative thought. You know, sometimes it's said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And so if you notice, because it happens, sometimes you may notice that some devotee does something wrong, then don't just get into a little meditation about it. If it's something which is just insignificant, like a personal sort of quirk, like when the Chinese devotees first came to India, to Mayapur, then some devotees noticed that when they chanted Hare Krishna, they mispronounced, they tended to pronounce the R's of Hare Krishna Rama a little bit like L's, something like that. And so it became an issue in the minds of some devotees, and there was discussion. But then it was seen that actually those devotees were making nice advancement. They had already made some nice advancement. And therefore, to make an issue of this pronunciation point, I mean, particularly seeing it's just ingrained in the kind of the makeup of the person, there's no point in worrying about it. But if you see someone doing something actually wrong, then either try and help them yourself, or if you feel you can't, inform someone who can. That is what to do. And don't just chat about it with your friends. You know what I saw? That sort of idea. If it's worth talking about or thinking about, express it to someone who may help the person. Anyway, that's the first offense. Second, of course, is to consider the names of demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Durga, Kalima. Who else? I was in someone's house a little while ago, actually. They had a big picture, really big, of Madhavira. I had heard the name before. I'd never seen a picture. Anyway, Madhavira and also Santoshi Ma, whoever your favorite may have been if you're from a Hindu background. and what to speak at Lord Shiva in Ganesh. And even in a certain context, at least, Hanuman. But to consider the names of these people to be equal to or independent of the name of the names of Lord Krishna. Because Krishna and his name are the same. They're not two, they're one. Binatvam, nama, namina. They're not two, they're one. The name and the person. So in effect, what you're saying, if you say that, well, the name of one of these other personalities, like Ganesha as an example, his name, chanting his name is the same as chanting Hare Krishna, then you are saying that he is the same as Krishna, which he's not. So Krishna is asamordva. No one's equal to him, no one is greater than him. And we must make that distinction. If not, and we get caught up in some version of, you know, like excessive equality, then that's the second offense. Third offense, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master, or as they say in Russia, there's a slightly different, there's a little variation, which includes that, disobey the orders, but also to consider him an ordinary man. Then fourth offense, to blaspheme the Vedic literatures or literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. Fifth offense, to consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be imagination, like exaggeration, that sort of idea. Sixth offense, to give some sort of mundane interpretation on the holy names, basically indicates to compare the holy names with some material type of activity or religious activity even. You may know that Lord Chaitanya, when he was teaching Sanskrit as a young person, around maybe 20 years of age, then one of his students who wanted to sort of curry favor to please Lord Chaitanya in order to get better marks, that sort of idea, he thought he would please Lord Chaitanya by giving a type of glorification, what he saw as such, of the chanting of Hare Krishna. So he said to Lord Chaitanya, you know, this chanting of Hare Krishna is so nice. So nice. I think it's equal to performing an Ashvamedha sacrifice, which is the biggest type of Karma Kandiya sacrifice, Ashvamedha. And he thought, yes, you know, I've given this, I've placed the chanting of Hare Krishna on such a high level now. It's equal to Ashvamedha. What more could you say? But Lord Chaitanya, unfortunately, was not pleased. And he took a stick and chased him. Yes. Because it's an offense to compare it to anything material. You know what they say? You compare, what is it, apples to apples, oranges to oranges, something like that. You don't really compare apples to oranges. It doesn't really work. And in this case, the difference is even much greater. It's much greater. The chanting of Hare Krishna is simply of a much higher, incomparably higher nature than even the highest and best material activity. Then seventh offense, to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy names. Eighth offense, to consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to actually be a Karma Kandiya activity. There's a little subtle difference between the sixth and the eighth offenses. One is to make a comparison, and the other is to say that it actually is like or is one of the, it's in the actual same category as materialistic religious activities, which it's not. Then ninth offense, to instruct the glories of the holy names to faithless people. And tenth offense, to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names and to maintain material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. Plus, it's an offense to be inattentive while chanting. So these are all there, I mean, to avoid the ten offenses in your chanting, as you're chanting Hare Krishna. It's a very important part of the first initiation. And of course, it's just a very important part of life in Krishna consciousness for anyone who's trying to be a devotee. Then we have our four devotees receiving second initiation. It's called Brahminical initiation. By receiving second initiation, you are then accepted as a Brahmin who is fit to perform Vedic sacrifices. As fit, no less fit, maybe more fit than someone who's born in a family that's traditionally been involved in such activities, but certainly no less qualified to perform Vedic sacrifices. So, now how does a person become fit, or become, how does it become accepted that someone could be given second initiation? Well, particularly, there are a number of factors, but particularly in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about the qualities of a Brahmin in the 18th chapter, verse 42.